Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. What you heard in the beginning of this show was the sound of a home run, which in my opinion is what the WWE hit last night for a number of interesting reasons that we will be discussing in depth here in a moment. First, let's get to a couple of small items of news. One is that apparently Apollo Crews has lost his last name in the exact same way that you would say Elias lost his. And, of course, the Bludgeon Brothers, now Harper and Rowan, have lost their first name. He is now going to be referred to as just Apollo. If you look on the WWE's website, you'll see that they've taken the Crews completely off it. Some people have said it was due to the fact that the school shooter in Florida's last name was Crews. I cannot believe that. That I do not believe. Because of one incident, you don't do that. I don't think anybody makes that connection. And I would think that would be a ludicrous thing. So I think that's just purely coincidental, and I think that's speculation. What I do think is that the WWE sometimes feels it's easier to identify someone by just like one name. It certainly helped Elias, because Samson, quite honestly, wasn't really a great last name for that character. It blurred the line between a folk singing, wandering minstrel and a strong man at a circus. You don't want that. He's not going to be the powerhouse guy. That's obviously not what they've got him booked for. So to indicate that he might be is not a good idea. Harper and Rowan sounds more menacing than Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. I get it. So maybe Apollo is just something they figured, look, we're going to start giving him a little bit of a push, and we think it'll be easier to identify him as just Apollo. And don't be surprised. The only reason they're not doing it with Titus is because of all of the great charity work and things he does. They want that full name out there for the press. So that's the reason that Titus hasn't been shortened to just Titus. Even though most of the time they do say Titus this and Titus that, they don't say Titus O'Neil this. And it's not Titus O'Neil worldwide, it's Titus worldwide. The second story that we want to touch on is that apparently the same source that indicated that Roman Reigns bought steroids from him a few years ago, now has come forward with another special in which he claims to have computer records of Roman Reigns and other wrestlers buying steroids from this particular person. Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again. He didn't really say steroids. He said substances which are illegal in the entire country and most of the world. So I don't know what the hell that is. But I've said it before and I will say it again. Roman Reigns is, I think, 6'3", 275 pounds maybe, 270. I'm not exactly sure, but somewhere that's a very close proximity to what Roman Reigns is. And his muscularity is, I don't know. I mean, he's in shape. I'm 6 foot two. I'm 257 pounds. I'm in approximately that same shape. And I don't take steroids, and I don't even work out extraordinarily heavily. So if Roman Reigns is taking steroids to look as he looks now, he should get a refund. Because just a decent diet and working out moderately is going to bring you that if you're, you know, it depends on obviously your genes, but mostly that's what will happen. He's not exactly, you know, Bill Goldberg or Batista or Ryback. It's not any of those people. I could name you a ton of people who are just as muscular than I guess Elias must be. Elias is much more ripped. So I don't know. I don't know. This guy goes on to say, there's no way that these guys, and I'm quoting him, there's no way that these guys walk around at 250 pounds with 4 to 6% body fat and not use something that causes that to happen. Well, if that's the case, then you better start looking at Cesaro. You better start looking at Sheamus. You better start looking at everybody. Now, I don't know whether this is just publicity to get people to watch his documentaries. I don't know what's going on here. What I do know is the WWE, if they knew for a fact that Roman Reigns did in fact take these steroids, it wouldn't have mattered. What does matter and would matter is if it comes out now and it gives them a black eye or shines a negative light on them, because then they will care and then they probably will demote Roman Reigns. Guilty by association. So they'll say, okay, well, we found out and we just, you know, wash our hands of it. So I don't know. I don't know where that's going. We'll obviously stay on it for you, and we will keep you updated on those news stories. But let's get to Monday Night Raw, because what a difference this show made. Now, there's many reasons why. One is way less backstage banter and nonsense. Way less. This was a show geared toward the action in the ring. That's positive number one. Positive number two is they clearly highlighted the fact that what they were trying to accomplish here is to get Seth Rollins reestablished as a top guy and one of their better main eventers they have on their roster. Number three, they used our philosophy, which we have been espousing on this show from day one, which is you need to allow a match time to breathe. If these eliminations had been 5 minutes and out, 5 minutes and out, 5 minutes and out, 5 minutes and out, no one would be talking about this today. The reason people are talking about this today is because this was a two-hour match almost. And yes, I know, it was kind of like little individual matches all tied into one. But nonetheless, it had a universal theme. And Seth Rollins stayed in there for about 50 minutes. And was given ample time to show what he can do, as was Roman Reigns, as was John Cena. These were not just fly-by-night, get-to-the-next-guy type things like the WWE normally puts on. So let's centrally focus first on each part of this match, and let's start with the way they set up the very first two competitors. Roman Reigns comes out, does his interview, basically says, I don't care if I've been chosen number one for this gauntlet match. All that really matters is that I'm going on to WrestleMania. I'm the only guy out of all seven of these guys that can beat Brock Lesnar. Proven fact. Because I would have beaten him at WrestleMania had it not been for extenuating circumstances. And then the very man who caused those extenuating circumstances comes out, Seth Rollins. And they proceed to have a good, solid 20-minute match that was a hell of a lot of fun. And gave us a clear, you know, as soon as they said disqualifications and countouts both count, I said, oh, God. Here we go. these two are both going to get counted out, and then the third guy is going to come in, and he's going to have to send the fourth guy in, and this is going to be a ripoff from Jump Street. That's really what I felt in my heart of hearts, that the WWE was going to give us what they usually do. Ripoff. And instead, they ran with this. They said, look, we can get the majority of the people in this show, in this gauntlet match, the top guys. Let's just let this match run and see what ends up happening. Well, what ended up happening? The fans are on their feet. Seth Rollins was reborn as a superstar last night. Yes, due to his hard work, but also due to your booking. And due to the fact that you gave him time to show what he can do. So let's just talk about the Roman Reigns portion of this. Roman Reigns, who's winning on Sunday. That's written in the stars. Unless this steroid bomb drops today or tomorrow, he's winning on Sunday. Roman Reigns did a fabulous job. A fabulous job of selling Seth Rollins. Those two guys worked very, very, very well together. And to be perfectly honest, after that match was over, I thought, well, whoever is coming out next will just kind of pick the bones of Seth Rollins and they'll have a perfect excuse. They'll say, well, I mean, come on. Seth Rollins just went through 20 minutes with Roman Reigns. How can he possibly fight off whoever's coming out next? And instead, Mike, they gave us a lot more.
And look, I'll say it again. We've said it before. To all those people who say Roman Reigns is not a good wrestler, take a look at this match. And you tell me what you think about it then. I mean, it's obvious that those two guys know from being up and down the roads together, they know each other like the back of their hand. Okay? And so when they go for their finishing maneuvers and they either sidestep it or block it or do whatever, you buy it because they've been together for so long, they were together for so long, they know each other. So, and it was a very, very fluid match. I mean, it was boom, 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 you know, and that's the case. Now, not being disqualified, getting disqualified, would kind of come into play later on with the Miz, but we can talk about that a little bit later. So, you know.
Yeah, look, what they did, which I never thought the WWE would do, is they gave the opportunity for the wrestlers, not just Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, John Cena, to give the fans something, to say, don't go out there in 5 minutes, 7 minutes, and out. Go ahead, run your match. Raw seemed to fly by. So there we go, out the window, with the theory that long matches won't keep the fans' attention, that span, they won't like it, they'll just want to get to the next one already, somebody go do an interview, we want to see so-and-so. Not at all. This is what the fans want. I would be willing, I don't expect you to do a two-hour match every week, but what I am willing to do is cut down the amount of people you see every week in lieu of featuring three or four long matches. Matches that fans will be able to buy into and say, oh, look what these guys can do. And that when they're not being handcuffed, when they're not being restrained by time. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins put on a solid 20-minute match that any fan, even the most ardent hater of Roman Reigns, cannot say that was not an entertaining match, Todd. They both did an excellent job.
You're absolutely right there. They did both. They did a great, excellent job with Reigns and Rollins there. And like you said, it looks like Rollins just got back on top last night as one of the top superstars. He really needed that last night.
He needed it badly, and the WWE needed it badly, not just him, because the WWE needed Rollins to be that guy. With all these injuries and everything, Rollins needs to be a top guy. And last night, the fans remembered, oh, that's why we like Seth Rollins. That's why he was carrying this company on his back for a year. Yeah. And the WWE listened to the fans. What did they do? They put Roman Reigns out there first, knowing he's going to get clean pinned. Clean pinned by Seth Rollins. It's not going to hurt Roman Reigns any to get clean pinned by Seth Rollins in a match like this, but it helps Seth Rollins a lot. A lot. And then as Seth Rollins is laying there, here comes John Cena's music, and you're like, oh boy. Okay, well, Cena's not going to pick the bones because that would make John Cena look like an opportunist, so they won't let him do that. So Rollins will put up a good fight, but you know that Cena's going to go ahead and go over, and then, of course, it ain't going to hurt Rollins because they'll say, well, you know, come on, he's just went 20 minutes. Now he's got to fight John Cena. No. If anything, the pace picked up. If anything, the match became more intense. And as the match got longer and longer and Rollins continued to kick out and get to the ropes and counter John Cena's moves, the more the fans were totally invested in this match, the more that Seth Rollins became the guy they wanted to see. This was a brilliant way to book this. And then, of all things, to have Seth Rollins come back from the brink of certain defeat, and pin John Cena, that sealed the deal. That's exactly what sealed the deal. Fans were ecstatic. So what did the WWE do? Remember we gave this big, long speech about listening to the fans, and some people got confused and thought that means, you know, holding up your hand over a wrestler's head and say, do you want him to come into this chamber? Do you want this guy? No, this is listening to the fans. They gave the fans double what they wanted. Some fans don't like Roman Reigns. They say he doesn't lose. He never sells. Well, guess what? He lost last night. John Cena, oh, he gets everything he wants. He lost last night, didn't he? So they gave you that double barrel of what you wanted, and they put it on the shoulders of Seth Rollins. They could not possibly have set up Seth Rollins any better. They let Seth Rollins take out clean Roman Reigns and John Cena in the same night, in the same match. And as soon as they did that, I knew where they were going with this, Mike, and that was they're making Seth Rollins a huge star again.
Yes, and that's where they're going with that, and that's exactly where this guy, that's exactly where he should be, is a big, huge star, you know. I mean, again, you've said it at the beginning. The guy carried this company on his back for the better part of a year, you know. That's where he should be. I mean, especially with John Cena gone to being a part-time guy, and we know what Brock Lesnar is, and the possibility of Lashley being a part-time guy. You're going to need somebody there that's going to be there the whole time, that can carry the company on his back.
And let's remember this. They mishandled Seth Rollins coming back from injury so badly that it nearly destroyed all of his popularity and his credibility. This is the way you rebuild it. If you want to listen to the fans, if the fans truly want wrestling, this is the time for the fans to make themselves vocal, and this is the time for the WWE to open up their ears. I don't want to see fans online today saying, well, come on, it was pretty predictable because once, of course it was. The minute John Cena was announced third, I said, okay, well, then we know who the fourth one is. Because we know Braun Strowman is winning. I knew Braun Strowman was winning from the moment they announced it, and I knew he'd be last. So who's he going to pin? Is he going to pin Finn Balor? No. He'll pin The Miz. So I already knew how it was going to go, Finn Balor, The Miz. And then, obviously, Braun Strowman. I don't want to hear nitpicking today, though. And here's why. The WWE is now opening their ears and saying, what did you think of last night's Raw? And if fans say, well, you know, it dragged a little and it was this, and then you're not going to get any more of it. And they're going to go right back to that old formula and say, forget it, you can't satisfy the fans. We tried to give them something different to see if that would pique their interest. This is the time to hit social media and say, yes, this is what we want. Yes, this was a success. Yes, this is what we watch wrestling for. And if you're truly a wrestling fan and you truly feel that you want to see these longer matches and more fleshed out storylines and let these athletes have time to show you what they can do, then this is the time to put aside the nitpicking. This is the time to put aside that it was a little bit predictable and just say, yes, this was the best Raw in a year. Why was it the best Raw in a year? Because of that match. And specifically because of three people, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and John Cena, because the match did slow down a little bit after that. But, of course it's going to. Now, the next great move that they put on was Elias coming out. Because then you knew Seth Rollins is not going to beat Elias too. And then it did look like Elias picked the bones. And that's what a bad guy does. He picks the bones. So the loss that Elias suffered later to Finn Balor doesn't mean anything. It's fine. I have no complaints. Because Elias did exactly what he was supposed to do. He picked the bones. And you knew Finn Balor's going to win, and then The Miz is going to come out, and then you're going to have Braun Strowman. Fine, that's predictable, but it didn't matter because the Elias-Finn Balor thing was good. It wasn't as good as Seth Rollins and either one of the first two competitors, but it was decent. The Miz and Finn Balor was decent and very logical. The Miztourage runs down and distracts him. The Miz hits him from behind. Everything in this match had some logic behind it. Perhaps not the exact order where you knew Braun Strowman was going to come out last, but I'm not nitpicking any of that. Because this 3 hours flew by. When they said two-thirds of this Raw has been taken up by this match, I said, nah, 2 hours didn't go by. And I look and I'm like, well, I'll be damned, it pretty much has. So much for the theory that fans are not going to buy into these longer matches. Todd, I thought they did a great job overall. So, okay, so Elias comes down. Let's talk a little bit about the Elias situation. Elias comes down to pick the bones of Seth Rollins. That's exactly what you expect a bad guy to do.
Yeah, absolutely right there. That is the right thing to do, have a bad guy like Elias come down to pick the bones of Seth Rollins. And look, it worked out pretty well in that match.
And now Elias can say, well, I pinned Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins pinned John Cena. Seth Rollins pinned Roman Reigns. And I pinned Seth Rollins. And fans can say, yeah, you pinned Seth Rollins after he went through John Cena and Roman Reigns. So that's not exactly true, but it is true that you pinned Seth Rollins. So it's a perfect bragging point for a bad guy. It's a perfect excuse and a way out for the good guy saying he pinned me, but come on, I went through 55 minutes with the two top guys in the sport today. It's a perfect way to book it, Mike, to make it look like Elias is tooting his own horn for something he technically did do, but in a weird way.
Right, and look, the first thing he did in that, when he first gets in, is a logical thing to do. Seth Rollins is still laying on the ground. He didn't go in there and pick him up. He didn't go in there and try to do something to him. He pins the man. He tries to pin him. That's the logical thing to do.
Absolutely. And did you notice that Elias was much more aggressive and fast-paced in the first, 2 minutes of that match? Like he was quickly trying to finish him off so he wouldn't expel too much energy to get to, because he knew there was other guys coming through.
Yes, and look, as far as the Miz goes, that's where I think that rule comes in, because you knew from past experience that at some point that the Miztourage was going to come down there and try to interfere in that match. You just knew that. So having that rule saying that if you get interference, you're going to be disqualified, that was a logical rule.
No, absolutely. Everything was working on all cylinders. Now, Finn Balor comes out. And I pretty much, okay, so now we know what the pecking order is going to be. There's only just two guys left. Braun Strowman is not going to pin Finn Balor because they don't want that confrontation. So you know The Miz is out next after that. And then it will be The Miz and Braun Strowman. But it doesn't matter. I think Finn Balor and Elias did a decent job. They let Elias get an awful lot of offense on Finn Balor before Balor hits him. The one thing I don't like, and again, I'm not nitpicking this match at all. This is just with Finn Balor. A drop kick to the corner should not immobilize a man for 3 minutes while he climbs the ropes, plays to the crowd, and then jumps on him. It's not a heavy enough move. Why would being drop kicked into the corner be any worse than being hard whipped into the corner? And that doesn't leave you lying there for minutes and minutes while somebody climbs the ropes. So I just don't like Finn Balor's whole moveset psychology. I just don't. That's all there is to it. I'm never going to. But it was a good enough. Elias has an excuse. Well, you know, I had to go through Seth Rollins and I was giving Finn Balor hell, but you know, whatever, it doesn't matter because I thought that one obvious point was missed with the announcers. And that was at some point they said, well, you're going to have to do this come Elimination Chamber. So this is the way it's going to go. No, that's not true. You're not going to have to do this during the Elimination Chamber because at some point there's going to be a bunch of people in the ring. And so it could potentially be, let's say, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman. And they could choose to just 2-on-1 them for a while. That didn't happen with a gauntlet match. So that's not at all true. The announcers dropped the ball on that, saying this is pretty much exactly the way it is. You have to run through all these guys. No, you don't. Because more than two people can be in the ring at the same time. But anyway, Finn Balor gets distracted right off the cuff by the Miztourage. The Miz hits him from behind. And I know a lot of people on social media and some of these other shows have been saying, well, this was the worst part of the whole match. It wasn't that good. I disagree. I disagree strongly. I thought this really sold The Miz as an opportunist, a very devious guy who uses outside interference, can pick the exact spot where it is most likely to pay off for him and get the cheap victory, and that's exactly what he did. And then I thought the brilliance in booking of that was that The Miz cheats, gets over on Finn Balor, and he's laughing about the fact that I got away with this. I totally got away with this. Finn Balor, you know, he's out of it. I win. And then it hits him. The realization hits him, wait a minute, that means there's only one guy left, and that would be Braun Strowman. And then the big Braun music hits, and the look on The Miz's face is priceless, and he's like, well, I'm just out of here. I'll just take the count out, which again is logical because you say to yourself, you don't want to be injured come Sunday, and you don't want to fight Braun Strowman. So, Mike, The Miz taking a powder was actually pretty logical.
It was pretty logical, but it didn't really work out for him because look at what happened, you know. Braun still
right, but at
his...
least they made it look like Strowman had to catch him.
And look, this is, and I'll say this right now. You could buy The Miz as the winner of the Money in the Bank, because that's the type of guy that would have that thing. It's this devious guy that knows when to cash it in and how to cash it in and what time and the timing is there when he cashes it in. And you would buy him as a Money in the Bank winner.
I agree with that. If The Miz had the Money in the Bank, then that is Money in the Bank because you could play up who is the most devious guy, who is the best at knowing exactly when the odds are in his favor, who's the guy who can stack the deck the best and the most opportunistic guy in the WWE, that's The Miz. And if you got him with a Money in the Bank briefcase stalking you, you know the situation. You know the mind games he's going to play. That would work, and The Miz could pull that off, beyond a shadow of a doubt. But what The Miz was trying to pull off here tonight was, I want no part of Braun Strowman because even if I have to stay in there against him for a while. I'm running the risk of being hurt. I don't care if I win this match. It's irrelevant at this point. I just want to go into the elimination chamber 100%. So he runs. Braun Strowman catches him, which is a little bit unrealistic, but okay. Okay, catches him. And the fight is on. We know Strowman's going to win, but it's okay. That's what the crowd wanted. They got that happy moment where he multiple power slams the entire Miztourage and The Miz. And this match, for the most part, yes, was the best part the first couple of competitors? Yeah, it was. But it didn't matter, because by that time, a real big story, a lot of stories were told. What was the stories? That Roman Reigns is a powerhouse, but unless he really does not like you, unless he really detests you, he doesn't have the killer instinct. There was a couple times when you saw in the match that he didn't go full-fledged at Seth Rollins like he would have a Brock Lesnar, like he would have a Braun Strowman, like he would have a Samoa Joe. And he wasn't upset that he lost, because he says to himself, you know, in other words, until you poke the beast, you don't get the best out of Roman Reigns. That was the story that was told. Roman Reigns is most dangerous when he's angry, and he wasn't angry last night. The story that was told with Seth Rollins is Seth Rollins can take a load of punishment, and he's technical enough to wrap you up at any moment and get that three count, even against bigger guys. The story that was told, I think, with John Cena is that John Cena realizes I'm coming to the end of my career, and this is extraordinarily important for me to win this match and solidify the fact that I am the top guy, that I still got it. And he loses. And now panic sets in and he goes backstage and says, I have to win this. This isn't a matter of wanting to win it. It's a matter of having to win it. It's a story of how Elias opportunistically picks the bones of Seth Rollins and then brags about it, that Finn Balor can overcome his size obstacle and get a victory over a bigger guy like Elias, but can get outsmarted by a devious guy like The Miz. And at the end, of course, the story is Braun Strowman is a monster, and it really doesn't make any difference what you do to him. You can outsmart him. It doesn't work. You can't really out-muscle him. Out-wrestling doesn't seem to work. Who's going to stop him? That's the story that was told. Every single chapter in this particular event told a story. And it was a good story. And this is exactly how the fans should want their wrestling. These 5-minute matches and out to the next match does no favors to the WWE. No favors at all. When you have these longer matches and you can show the talent of the workers and you can stretch this out, then you get to see what they do. You know, it's the equivalent of going to a concert and, you know, the guy does 2 songs and he's off stage and you're like, well, I don't know. I guess the 2 songs were good, but I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I thought we'd have something. That's what it's like. Now you see Seth Rollins give you 50 minutes and you're like, wow, everybody all of a sudden remembers, wait, Seth Rollins is a great wrestler. This is exactly the point we've been making on this show for a long time. Forget these quick flash matches. Yeah, you want to have a squash match, go ahead. But you've got to give us a few matches on Raw and a few matches on SmackDown to have some time to breathe. Caller, are you there? Hello. Guess not. Anyway, Mike, that's exactly what I think fans should be shooting for, is to let the WWE know this is what we want.
Yes, and look, I'll say it for the first time tonight, today, SmackDown tonight is going to have a lot to live up to, you know. I mean, that's going to be the case, and we still haven't gotten to the rest of this show. I mean, it's not just this match that makes us probably close to being an A-plus show, you know.
Yeah, we're going to get to the rest of it. I mean, it did have its problems. There's a couple of other things you might not like, but let's get to some of the rest of this. So then we have probably the worst part of the show, where the WWE, mind-blowingly dumb decision to have Asuka go out there and conduct an interview when she just can't do it. I don't know why they insist on it. I just don't know why. Why can't she be the silent but deadly, person? Why can't she? Because she goes out there and she was nervous. You could tell she didn't know what the hell to do. She stumbled around a little bit with the words, trying to figure out what she was going to say. Crowd wasn't into it. Nia Jax attacks her from behind. Fine. That's WWE business as usual. I didn't like it. I think it exposes Asuka's weakness of not being able to use the mic in, English language anyway. And why do it? If you know you have an athlete that has a weakness, why do you continue to spotlight the weakness instead of cover it up? Why couldn't Asuka have grabbed that microphone and before she uttered one word, Nia Jax attacked her? Why couldn't that happen? Why did you have to put her through the humiliation of attempting to cut a promo when you know, and she knows, can't do it? Not live. That didn't make any sense to me, Mike. I just thought it was, again, shining a spotlight on the weakness of one of their workers.
This is going to be one of the few. Yeah, it did sign a weakness. And look, we've said it before. She would do very well with somebody like, Paul Heyman, Goldust, even to some extent, somebody like a Bray Wyatt, somebody that can talk. If you didn't want to put her with a man, fine. Put her with Lita. Put her with somebody that can talk for her. I mean, if you're going to make her something big, she has to either get better with speaking the language, or has to have somebody with her. Other than that, look, this is bad, but this is not going to affect my grade, at the end of the show.
I just think that, if you're going to spotlight Asuka the way you are spotlighting Asuka, you have to know she can't cut a promo, and you have to say it doesn't matter. Brock Lesnar can't cut a promo. So what do? Do you just keep sticking the microphone in front of Brock Lesnar's face and say, do it anyway, do it anyway, do it anyway? No. So why are you doing it to Asuka? Makes no sense. Todd, that wasn't a good moment.
You're absolutely right there. That's not a good moment with Asuka. Well, like you said, I think she needs to get a mouthpiece or something, or just be a silent, deadly female competitor.
I'm totally up for the silent, action speaks louder than words type, because what we saw last night didn't do her any favors. Let me go one more time to the caller and see if you're there. Caller, are you there? No, he is not. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. We then get Titus Worldwide, who have two victories over the bar, against the bar. And I'm not going to lie, this wasn't a great match. But what it did do is it gave us another viable team on Raw. We now know that Titus and Apollo Crews are being thought of as a viable team. They're not jabrones. And I guess this is what we're going to get for the Elimination Chamber. And I'm okay with it. Apollo Crews is one of their better athletes. And Titus has always been underutilized, in my opinion. He's always been really good on the mic. He's very good outside the ring as a ambassador for the WWE. And I think the WWE is beginning to wake up to that a little bit more. And I don't see any reason why these guys can't be a top team. I think Dana Brooke does a really good job. And now they're starting to flesh this out. And by flesh it out, I mean before you're like a statistician. What the hell does she do? A statistician for what? And I thought last night, and I'm sure it was lines were fed to him, but Corey Graves was saying, look, these are legitimate stats. Did you know that Sheamus in certain temperature, like the building is the same temperature, but when it's outside, the temperature is this or that, which would have no relevance whatsoever. on the inside temperature, actually doesn't do that well, and he's throwing out all these ridiculously bogus, meaningless statistics that supposedly Dana Brooke fed to him. And it's kind of humorous, and it kind of works. And you're saying to yourself, okay, I get the gimmick now. We're going to get all these weird statistics from Dana Brooke, like, you know, in cities that have more than five letters in its name, this particular athlete is only 60%, you know, whatever. And that's a halfway decent gimmick, Mike.
That is a halfway decent gimmick. And look, I mean, when he said that, and then not 5 minutes later, he changes the tune. What's his name? Called him on it, which is a logical thing for him to do. You know, the guy that just rehired.
Coach.
He called him on it, and I'm listening to that. I'm thinking, wow. Logic, more logic, you know?
Yeah, the show had a lot more logic in it than normal. That's for damn sure. We then get to, again, if we want to talk about logic, a sort of a logical six-woman tag match, which basically features three factions, although one faction's on opposite teams, because we have, of course, the Riot Squad is on one side with Alexa Bliss. And then we have the two best friends there in Sasha and Bailey, and they're with Mickie James. But Mickie James and Alexa Bliss have sort of their own little thing going. And Alexa Bliss didn't want to fight Mickie James. And we're saying to ourselves, well, this is a really nice setup for the Elimination Chamber, because now we have six women, three sort of alliances. So there's a storyline going on here. And the storyline is, how much of a strength and alliance does Bailey have with Sasha? Not very much, as we know. They're willing to go at each other for the ultimate prize. How about Alexa and Mickie James? Is that real, or is Alexa using her? What's going on there? What happens when they're really going to have to fight? You know they're going to have to. And then the Riot Squad. What happens if they're in the ring by themselves? What happens then? So we actually have some intrigue and some branches on the tree, which we talk about often here, to the Women's Elimination Chamber match. And that makes that match all that much better, Mike.
It really does. But it's not the Riot Squad. It's Absolution, right?
That's what I mean, Absolution. Yeah, yeah. My bad.
It would have been, if Paige had not gotten hurt, this would have been a more and more interesting match. But, yeah, we got some very interesting things that are being told in this women's match. And, again, they let this match breathe. It wasn't just your typical six-person, maybe five-minute match. It was what?
20 minutes.
10 minutes? 15? Yeah. You know? It was the rest of the show. You had a two-hour match between – you know, a two-hour basically match, and then you had, what, a 10-minute tag team match, correct?
Yep.
You know, and you had another 10-minute six-man match, which, like you said, I'm all for this, you know. And look, I'll say it again. Sheamus is very much underappreciated and I love Sheamus, and I tell you what, I hope what I'm seeing from Bailey is them trying to get her back to where we know she can be, you know, because she wrestled pretty well in that match, you know.
I think they're trying to rehab Bailey in the right way now. Before, they were trying to make Bailey this hopeless little girl whose starry-eyed dream is to be a wrestler, but she doesn't have the killer instinct, and they were hoping that would somehow put fan sympathy on her side, but instead, people were just like, well, is she ever going to fight back? And I think now they've realized their mistake, because you can actually hear the announcers, and I'm sure they're being told to say it, saying, well, this is a little bit different, Bailey. She's much more aggressive. She has a little bit more of an edge to her. This is the Bailey that we have been waiting to see since she came to the WWE. And that's, That's keyword for we're wiping the slate clean with Bayley, and we're going to start giving her a little bit more of a push, and so she's going to be a little edgier, and we're going to give you guys what you want, which, again, is listening to the fans. Since pretty much day one on this show, we have said that the WWE categorically refuses to listen to its fans. If you want somebody pushed, they say, no, that's not the guy we want pushed. They just have him lose, so you stop wanting them pushed. If you decide you'd like this person, they say, oh, no, we don't want that. That person's not in our plans, so we're going to just make you stop liking that person. Perhaps the WWE's woken up and said, I think we have to give the fans the Bayley they want. I think we have to give fans the Seth Rollins they want. I think we have to give fans matches that they're going to be invested in. Now, I heard someone say, and it's absolutely correct, that we live in a different era because fans don't get emotionally invested in the matches like they used to. In other words, there's nobody you really hate or nobody you really love. It's not even about seeing a bad guy get their comeuppance anymore. It's about the performance. We come about now. And that's a shame because, you know, you don't do that in a movie. You don't go to the movie and because the bad guy's a good actor, you don't say, well, he's a good actor, so I'm just sitting back and enjoying his performance. No, you're rooting for him to get his ass blown away by the good guy. And that's sort of what wrestling's supposed to be. And it's kind of gotten away from that. But I think you can accomplish the same thing if you allow the matches to flesh themselves out like this, because fans will solidly get behind someone. If the WWE did not take a note last night of how different the reaction to Seth Rollins was when he left that arena, there were fans chanting, thank you, Seth. If they didn't get the key from that, that's what the fans want. They want the wrestlers to be given the ability to show the fans what they can do. And I guarantee if you talk to the wrestlers, they probably don't want to do an hour match every week. But what they would like to do is have enough time to really come up with a good match and not just cut to the chase. You get in your spot, I get in my spot, we go home. We got 8 minutes. I'll get in this, you get in that, boom, done. I don't think they want to do that on a regular basis. Any more than a band would want to be cut down to three songs and say you get three songs and then you leave. You want to be able to show that audience what you can do. You want to be able to perform to the top level of your ability. And when you're given that opportunity and you can shine like Rollins did last night, makes a difference. Makes a huge difference. Now let's talk about one of the moments that made me want to stab a ice pick in my knee. And that is, we have now know that Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy are going to fight again. And collectively, I think the WWE Universe is saying, why? If you were going to set this match up, then why on the 25th anniversary did you have Bray Wyatt dispatch Matt Hardy pretty much quickly and pretty much solidly and clean? What more to this feud is there? Bray Wyatt fought Matt Hardy, Broken Matt, Woken Matt, whatever the hell he is, on the 25th anniversary show, and in under 8 minutes, pinned him clean. That's good enough? You keep saying, we don't want to rehash these same feuds. What are you talking about? They fought each other on every pay-per-view. It seems like they fought each other. Remember when Matt Hardy said, we've been fighting each other for eternity? Yeah, I believe it. That's what it feels like. I don't want to see this match. And I'm pretty sure that Matt Hardy will win because he lost at the 25th anniversary show. So why? What are you going to do, bury him completely by having him lose twice? So I don't know what that means for Bray Wyatt. Not much. So yeah, this match is like the pop. Nobody wants to see this match. Nobody does. And announcing it is almost annoying because it's almost like saying, we're giving you fans what you want, except we're still going to give you this shit. So you know what? We'll give you what you want for your main course, but we're going to shit in your dessert. Well, no. Could we just move on? Can we just move on? You've totally ruined the Matt Hardy broken gimmick anyway by not utilizing it the right way. You never spotlighted it as Impact did. You didn't bother with the weird lighting. You didn't bother with the cool backgrounds. You didn't bother with any storylines. You didn't bother with any shots of the compound or things outside. You didn't bother bringing in his whole entourage. You didn't bother with any of this. You just told him, just stand in front of the white wall over there and go, hey, and that'll be good enough. Well, it's not good enough. Nobody wanted that. That's not what the gimmick is. I always hated the gimmick anyway. Even in Impact, I thought it was a satire of professional wrestling. I actually thought it was making fun of professional wrestling. I mean, you let a child beat Rockstar Spud. But if you're going to do it, at least do it right. If you're going to do it, at least put effort into it. You didn't put any effort into this. And now you're going to say, well, hey, Matt, we tried with this character and it bombed. No, you didn't. You didn't try with that character at all. You gave us a watered-down crapola version of that character and said, well, that's good enough. No, it's not good enough. And with Bray Wyatt, well, you've steadily beat him down until I just don't have any idea if you can even rehab this character at this point. I don't know what more you can do to Bray Wyatt to beat him down. So no, the fans are not invested in either one of these characters. And it's a shame. So that one, Mike, I have to say, snapped me back to reality and said, oh, geez, just when I thought the WWE was listening to their fans, here we go with this crap.
Right, but the two worst parts of Raw, I'll say it again, these two worst parts of Raw, and we know the other one we're talking about, they're not going to mess with my grade too much, when we go ahead and grade this thing. But yeah, I mean, they basically destroyed both gimmicks, both characters, They had something with Bray Wyatt. They had it. And now they're going to put him in an interminable feud with Matt Hardy, even though we know that Matt Hardy is probably not going to be around too much longer. And who knows, Bray Wyatt may not be around too much longer.
Yeah, it may not be. And listen, I am not a fan of the broken Matt Hardy gimmick. I was on this show many times saying it's stupid and I think it pokes fun at professional wrestling and it makes wrestling look like a joke. But there were people who enjoyed it. And if you're going to go for it, then just go for it. Do it exactly the way it's supposed to be, because doing it half-assed isn't going to work. Doing it full might not have worked, but at least you could have said, look, we gave it a shot. We did exactly what Matt Hardy wanted us to do, and we gave him creative control and let him run wild with his character, and hey, it didn't work. Well, you did not do that. Even the lighting, if you go back and you watch these old Impact things, the lighting was kind of dark and eerie, and there was an atmosphere when he talked. They put him in front of a, white wall with normal backstage lighting, and it didn't have the same effect. They didn't do any of the cinematography type. They didn't do any of the production. The Matt Hardy woken, broken gimmick involves production. And the WWE didn't want to do any of that production. And so what ends up happening? It bombs. Of course it bombs. You didn't do that to Bray Wyatt. I mean, you always put Bray Wyatt in front of the eerie sort of a lighting in a weird dark place. Matt Hardy was the same way. I don't know why. I don't know why you didn't do it. And supposedly fought so hard to get that gimmick. Very unusual. Anyway, there was two very bad parts of Raw last night. The announcement of this match and the ridiculous back and forth between these two, which for the most part has just been two guys laughing in each other's face. Let's face it. And putting Asuka through that. Since Asuka has arrived in the WWE, even a little bit in NXT, I wasn't too fond of her, to be honest. She's a good wrestler, but I think she lacks some of the fundamental psychology of the sport that makes it fun to watch her matches. But last night I felt sorry for her. That's the first time I felt sorry for her. because you could clearly see that she was struggling. You could clearly see she was uncomfortable. And for the first time, you saw that vulnerability and said, oh, man, why did they make her do that? They had to know it wasn't going to come out well. And I found myself saying, come on, just get it out, you know. And, God, it was just, it hurt. I think that hurt. So those are the two worst parts of Raw. But let's get to our ratings because, as you said, and I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not going to nitpick this show, and I'll tell you why I'm not going to nitpick it, because if I do, and all the fans do, then the WWE is going to say, well, we tried something different, and fans' reaction was no better. So I guess that's not the way to go. No, this is the way to go. You don't have to give us a two-hour match every week, WWE, but can you give us more of these 20-minute-plus matches? Can you let the wrestlers show what they really can do? Because that's what we want to see. And if every guy doesn't get on every Raw, that's okay. Brock Lesnar's not on every Raw. And you say, well, that's what makes it special. Okay. Well, then let's have that. That's what makes it special if we don't happen to see The Bar 1 week, if we don't happen to see Roman Reigns 1 week, if we don't happen to see Seth Rollins 1 week or whoever, that's fine. Give us more of these type matches. Give us more of the 15 to 20 minute matches. And for that reason, I'm not nitpicking this show. I just pointed out the obvious, but I'm not going to nitpick it. I'm giving this show an A+. And the reason I'm giving it an A+ is because I think the WWE made a conscientious effort to listen to the fans for the first time in a long time. And they gave us back Seth Rollins, who had been woefully underutilized and misused, to a guy that the fans are now going to say, oh yeah, now we remember why. We were all big Seth Rollins fans. Seth Rollins didn't change. The way they used him changed. And that's why we all considered him, well, he's a mid-carder, I guess. He's not as good as we thought he was. No, he still is. So was Dolph Ziggler. So with Heath Slater. So was a lot of these guys that they just underutilize. And when you finally get to see them in the real light, then you say, oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess he is better than we thought. Yeah. So for that reason, I have to give it an A+, Mike. I'm not going to nitpick the small things.
I'm not trying. There are three things that I'm going to nitpick. The two things plus I'm going to kind of nitpick the announcement of Jeff Jarrett going into the Hall of Fame on this basis. Jeff Jarrett, who is well documented, had his problems with the company, goes into the Hall of Fame. What about China? You know, why can't China go in? You know, that's where I'm going to nitpick, and I'm going to give it an A.
Okay. You know, we didn't touch on the Jeff Jarrett thing, which is a good point. Look, Jeff Jarrett didn't do – they can say he was one of the greatest Intercontinental Champions of all time. That's not true. Jeff Jarrett didn't do a lot for the WWE, quite honestly. And I know a lot of people said, well, the Warrior, you know, he held them up for money and they put him in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, but he did a lot more for the WWE than Jeff Jarrett ever did. Maybe bridges have been repaired. They did pay for his last rehab session. Maybe the olive branch has been extended. A lot of time has went by. Everyone has confessed their sins. Let's hope that that's the case. They did the right thing. Jeff Jarrett does belong there, not so much for what he did in the WWE, but what he's done for wrestling in general. Anyway, Todd, what's your rating?
I got to go with an A+, too. You.
I really believe this show is as close to good, perfect as it could be. You misused Asuka, and no one wants to see Bray Wyatt versus Matt Hardy. But, hey, those are very small points in a much larger show. For the first time in a long time, 3 hours seemed like an hour and a half. I kept saying to myself when they said, oh, he's been in there 50-some-odd minutes. I'm like, no. That's not true. And then I'd check my time and I'd be like, yeah, I guess, wow, an hour did go by. Oh, my God. Yeah, it flew by. Let's hope the WWE learns from this. Let's hope the WWE realizes that the fans' reaction to this show means this is what we want to see more of. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens on SmackDown tonight, and we will be back here on Thursday with more Wrestle Chat Radio.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio.
Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.